O King Rahugana, Tvam, you, Api, also, he, certainly, Advanaha, of the path of material existence, Asya, this, Sanyastadanda, having given up the king's rod for punishing criminals. Krittabutta Maitra, having become friendly to everyone. Asajjita Atma, whose mind is not attracted to the material pleasure of life. Hari Sevaya, by the means of loving service to the Supreme Lord. Shitam, sharpened. Jnana Asim, the sword of knowledge. Adaya, taking in hand. Tara, crossover. Atiparam, to the ultimate end of spiritual existence. Translation, my dear King Rahugan, you are also a victim of the external energy. Being situated on the path of attraction to material pleasure, so that you may become an equal friend to all living entities, I now advise you to give up your kingly position and the rod by which you punish criminals. Give up attraction to the sense objects and take up the sword of knowledge, sharpened by devotional service. Then you will be able to cut the heart knot of illusory energy and cross to the other side of the ocean of nescience. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna compares the material world to a tree of illusion, from which one must cut oneself free. Narupa masyeya tato palabhyate nanto nachadir nachamat sampratista asvatam inam suvirido mulam asanga sastrena dridena chitva tatapadam tat parimari gitavyam yasmin katana nivartanti buya tam eva chadyam purusam prabhaji yata prevritti pasista purani. The real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. But with determination, one must cut down this tree with the weapon of detachment. So doing, one must seek that place from which, having once gone, one never returns, and there surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything has begun and in whom everything is abiding since time immemorial. Bhagavad Gita 15, 3 and 4. So in Bhagavad Gita, it describes Asvatama Prauravyayam Urdamulam Adasakyam. Or it is describing that the roots of the tree are upwards and the branches downwards. And it says that with the axe of detachment, or based on transcendental knowledge, as is made clear here, one has to cut the root of the tree. One has to cut it at the root. So, material life, one action leads to another, and again, to another, and to another. Because there is always another imperfection. Basically, all this is driven by the desire for happiness, anandamaya byasat. So the driving force in material life is happiness. And then it appears that if we make a little adjustment to the present situation, then there will be happiness. But then we find that that new situation is indeed very good, but there still needs a little further adjustment. If you just make that additional adjustment, there will be happiness. You make that additional adjustment and then find only that still it needs a little more adjustment. And in this way we keep on adjusting until finally we adjust our grave, which also needs a little adjustment. There is no end, basically, to this little adjustment that always needs to be made. So somehow or other, we have to give up this idea that we need a little adjustment in the material circumstances. Rather, one has to come to the point where say, I'll just accept it as it is, somehow or other, and tolerate, and get on with it, get on to my real business, devotional service to Krishna, chanting the holy name, and other things. Really, to make any adjustments in material life is something to be avoided as much as possible. Minimal, really minimal. Whatever minimal is, that depends on the individual. Still, that is the concept. Vairagya Vijanija Bhakti Yoga. That renunciation is not just for the renounced order of life, it is a fundamental element of Bhakti Yoga. Although Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagya Uchate, one can engage the things of the material world in the service of Krishna. Nonetheless, these things, they have a nature of their own. What can we say? Yes, everything has a nature of its own, and with it, it brings sukha and dukkha, happiness and distress. So, and that happiness cannot fulfill the material happiness, whatever it is, it will not fulfill. Therefore, ultimately, that will also be distressful, because there will not be complete happiness. Therefore, dukkhalayam asaswatam. Material existence is temporary and full of misery. That's not a problem, because spiritual life is full of bliss. Right? So it would be very depressing to say dukkhalayam asaswatam, material world is temporary and full of misery. What kind of philosophy is this? Grim, grim, grim. Right? But it's not that grim, because devotional service is all auspicious. It's mentioned in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Klesa Agni Subhada. Devotional service is Subhada. It is auspicious in all respects. Everything becomes positive result. So that's our business. But kings get easily distracted. In India, I used to buy marble in the town of Makrana. And basically, Makrana was a sleepy little town in Rajasthan, where the king had a palace. And actually, whenever we were there, we used to stay in the king's palace. That was the arrangement. He was a nice king, the king of Makrana. Thakur Vijay Singh and his son Chandravir. So they were kshatriyas and everything nice. But time had caught up. And now, previously, there was the royal palace, and around the royal palace many little cottages where ordinary people lived. And now, amongst many of these cottages, there were many palaces that were bigger than the king's palace, because, after all, Makrana is the place of marble mines. And previously, they were also mining marble for actually hundreds of years. But now it's almost finished, it's almost run out, because
Now they're mining with dynamite. And whereas previously there were a few little mines, and marble was used for temples and for palaces. But nowadays in India, everybody has marble in the kitchen, in the bathroom. It's a standard thing. And so for that now, dynamite. And you go to this place, Makrana, and it's just, if you've heard of the moon as a landscape full of craters, go to Makrana and you can see what craters are. They've blasted, and there's always blasting going on. And then you cannot pass, you have to hide behind something, and rocks are flying. Yes. So it's inconceivable. And yes, and the result is that many of the common men now also have palaces and live like kings. Just see. And this is supposed to have improved the quality of life. 7 billion people now on the planet, right? And in the year 2050, it will be 9 billion, and people are asking, is it actually possible to supply food? And what about the impact on the environment and all this? And actually, this planet cannot really, in a healthy way, sustain more than 1 billion people. So really, 6 billion have to die. Yeah. It's in the interest of the planet, really. 6 billion people have to die. And you can think for a moment in the mind of people who are following this philosophy, in which category Hare Krishnas would be placed, in the 1 billion that is supposed to live or with the 6 billion that is supposed to die. Oh well. Yeah. Just can think about it yourself if you want. So, and Americans, so we have heard, have in the beginning of the millennium drastically changed their food package. Since centuries, Americans were eating the same, but in the year 2002, Americans made a major change in their eating habits. Americans were namely concerned about getting fat. And it finally, and therefore they gave up fatty foods for some time. But then the greatest discovery was there, that you can eat fat and not get fat when you give up carbohydrates. And bread disappeared from the dinner table. Bread, the ancient staple food, went off the dinner table. So much so that many bakeries went bankrupt, and further even, that the production of grain has diminished drastically. Interesting. One can see how much confusion, how much delusion is there in a world controlled by mass media, and where a so-called reality is created, and everyone buys into it because of mass communication, and suddenly it starts to have an impact. In Vedic text, it is said that small bodies of water can become contaminated. It's said, but large bodies of water never become contaminated. That was in Vedic times, of course. Now, large bodies of water are also becoming contaminated. The acidity of the ocean and so on is having serious effects. So they say that the pollution in the ocean has a more serious effect than the pollution on the land. Well, I don't want to speak necessarily about ecology and so on, but I just wanted to kind of show how this so-called royal lifestyle of modern people creates a burden on the planet. And if we would simply live in cottages, then life would be no problem. There's so much land. Just go to a country like South Africa. It's empty. Of course, Holland is a little bit full. Not much space here. In terms of a country, Holland is the most densely populated place per square kilometer. In terms of a city, it's Tokyo, the most densely populated city in the world. But Holland is the most densely populated country. So it's kind of, there's not much land here. There's not much land at all. It's like more water than land there. So pump it dry is the motto. Or build artificial islands. Or make part of the city of Amsterdam floating. Right? The floating city in Eiburg. And there are rumors that the Hare Krishna temple is going to move to that part of town. I don't know if we're going to float or if we're on some land. That we'll see. Actually, I went to school and we had a number of maybe half a dozen, no more even, of floating classrooms. Yeah. It's floating classrooms. It was sort of when these boats go by, these the transport, boats. Then up and down, but you get used to it. It was okay. It was a bit humid, smelly sometimes from the water, from the river. You'd go over the bridge into the classroom and you see the stool going under the bridge. Such is life. Yes. But, so the material world, some adjustments are to be made. We need to make a shelter. But the more people are impious, the more shelter we require. In the Satya Yuga, the climate is ideal, the atmosphere is very peaceful, grains grow naturally, right? Like now grass, just grains grow. So there's no problem really. It's lots of fruits and lots of things. So there's no need for any farming. Farming comes later. In the Satya Yuga, there are no farmers. I'm sorry for that. Yeah. In the Satya Yuga, there are only transcendentalists. And everyone is absorbed in meditation, jhana, on the Supreme Lord, and finds himself some place to be peaceful. And just to focus on the Lord. Finish. Right. No other business. Now, so much business, right? Like business. Well, ultimately, to deal with the business of eating, mating, sleeping, and defending these things. Right? So, Jabbarat has already in the previous verses emphasized the need to minimize mating and all the complexities that arise from mating. So, today, I'll leave that for what it is, since I already discussed that a few days ago. But today I went into eating, right? And I was looking at a nutritional study where I got that information from the American food package, which I thought was interesting, which was called the dilemma of the omnivore, that human being an omnivore and having to choose what to eat, and having to choose, and, you know, be a vegan or a vegetarian, for example, which even in the Hare Krishna movement has become a fashion, which shows that we have become toothless. We have veganism is for toothless Hare Krishnas, for those who don't have a bite, right? Because basically, we have to convince the world that cow protection is what it's all about. The very foundation of society is cow protection. If there's no cow protection, then society is a demoniac society. Yeah. We have to stand up to the world and point out that the perfect diet is milk, is a lacto-vegetarian diet. It must be very lacto, right? Because if it's not there, then if it's not lacto, then we don't want cows. Yeah. Yesterday, we were kind of joking about the vegan world, and we were speaking about what are we going to do when the vegan army invades, you know? And we'll have to disguise all the cows here in Holland as sheep, and I cover them in like a layer of wool and hide them, so we have very big sheep here in Holland, because cows will not be wanted in a vegan society. And then someone said, yeah, but what do they say? Moo! I said, then we translate, this is Dutch for bleh. The Dutch. In this way, we understand that veganism is artificial. It's not a question of a choice. You know, it's not like, well, you know, milk, the milk is so bad. That's okay. Let the milk be so bad. Let's make better milk. Let's protect some cows more and more. Let's have farms. Let's somehow or other protect farms. Let's really protect cows. Yeah. And because that's the solution. And for the energy crisis, bullock power. Yeah, but Maharaj, that doesn't create enough energy. It does. You just have to make a small adjustment. You like small adjustments. So this time, a small adjustment. Just have to kick out 99% of your lifestyle. And give up your electric toothbrush. Oh, but my dentist is saying that it's essential. Essential. Well, you know, you can also chew on twigs, actually, as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, who still had his original teeth. When Prabhupada was in Tittenhurst, John Lennon's estate, there was a gardener. And Prabhupada, it was an old man, and they had some discussions. And then Prabhupada asked him, you know, they had this small talk, and then Prabhupada would say, so, you still have all your teeth? And the man said, oh no, I used to eat too many sweets. Prabhupada said, I also ate many sweets, but I ate the right sweets. Many sweets. Sweets, milk sweets, yes. When Giriraj Maharaj, at that time Brahmachari, was staying in India, his parents always wanted him back in America so that they could influence him, and Prabhupada would keep him in India. So at one point, they had already tried in Calcutta. His father had offered him a lot of money. That story is basically in Calcutta, in the temple, in Albert Road. Prabhupada's room has a very thin wall. It's like cardboard. It's board. Very thin. So you can hear everything. You don't... Giriraj's father came, you know, to speak to his son about coming back, and he was a lawyer and very wealthy. So they went into Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada wasn't there, just went into the room, which is the only room where you could have a private conversation. And all the devotees were listening on the wall, right? And then this conversation went on. And the conversation was basically, you know, I don't know if you know, Giri Rajamaraj very well, but he never raises his voice. He's sort of like always speaking very calm, very slow. And, yeah. So the father was also like that. So the father came and the father said, "Son, I want you to come home." "No, father, I will not do that. I will stay here." And then after that, Giriraj came out of the room and he said, "I had a big argument with my father just now." Anyway, so, but he was staying in India. So then he was in Bombay, and Prabhupada engaged him in a temple, and, you know, because he's the son of a lawyer, he wound up doing legal work, right, fighting a legal battle. Anyway, so his parents came, and then his mother came and said, "Oh, he looks so skinny. He looks so skinny. I am really worried, you know. I mean, he should come back to America, at least for some time, you know, for some time, for his health." And then Prabhupada arranged to bring some sweets. And he brought some, had some sandesh brought in, and he gave it to the mother. The mother tasted. "Please take. She said, "Is it tasty?" Prabhupada said. She said, "Oh, yes, very tasty." Prabhupada said, "Oh, yes, yes, and it's very healthy also. It's full of protein. And I will make sure that your son will every day get some of these sweets so that he gets enough protein, you know, so he gets some strength, you know." After she left, she said, "Oh, he takes care of our son very nicely." They went out of the room. So Prabhupada was very expert like that. Mm-hmm. But it is a fact. Everything is there in the lifestyle of Krishna consciousness. Oh. We're living in this crazy world, in this artificial life. And in it, we have to try and be Krishna conscious. And in it, it is difficult to be Krishna conscious, because it forces us to get locked in a whole chain of activities. Artificial, to maintain ourselves. I found that the best time in my life was when I lived in Vrindavan from 78 to 84. And why was that so? Well, first of all, because I lived in Vrindavan. But I later also lived in Vrindavan. And later I also lived in Mayapur. But why from 78 to 84? Because in those days Vrindavan was still traditional. It wasn't so influenced by modern Western things. It was very traditional. And people would drink water from the well and keep it in a clay pot and so on. Everything, the devotees would walk. We would sleep on straw mats. We would, you know, live in a traditional way. And living in that traditional way was favorable for spiritual life. There was some austerity, it was simple, and it sort of made it easy to be Krishna conscious. Whereas the complexity of life only makes it difficult to be Krishna conscious. So that was the point. This king, right, who had his kingly position, his whole life was so complicated. Yeah, so complicated. Just didn't help at all for being Krishna conscious. To be a king, it's difficult to be Krishna conscious. So in our modern society, it's more difficult. And we feel that when you're like in, you know, we say Amsterdam. Some people are attached to Amsterdam. They like it. And because they are not from Amsterdam. When you are from Amsterdam, then you look at it a little different. I call it Amsterdam. Yeah. Amsterdam. And but some, they love Amsterdam. Yeah. Not to mention any names. And they would never go back home to a nice village with nice nature. It's, oh, God, no. Amsterdam. But it's more difficult to be Krishna conscious. More difficult. when we go away from the traditional way of life, because we get so caught up. It's like you try to call Uddhava at 7:30 in the morning, it's already too late because he's gone to work.
Right.
I'm saying that's kind of quite normal. Everyone's going to work. They're already at work. And those who are not yet at work, they will come home late from work. And we give you some flexibility as long as you put in the hours. So it's an exploit of society. Prabhupada used to say 6 hours is plenty. Don't work more than 6 hours for your livelihood. Who's doing that? In this world, forget it. So like this, we can see that we have made life complex and with artificial comforts to which we are attached, but that are not necessarily making us healthy. Just like in a Vedic model, you sit on the floor, a little cushion. And in a modern society, it's a comfortable armchair. Yeah. But the people that sit in comfortable armchairs, they do yoga to be fit. Yeah. And they sit on the and then they sit on the floor, do exercise on the floor. The people that live in the floor culture, that sit on the floor, they don't do yoga. And they're quite fit. I've seen, at least in that more traditional India, I've seen old men climbing over walls and things like, in their 80s, they climb over a wall. I've already come to the state when I see a wall and a gate, and I have to walk around for the gate. Now I walk around. 20 years ago, I would jump over the wall. And I said, forget it, I'm not going to walk away all the way around. No, I just walk around. It's too much trouble to jump over the wall. Yeah, I'm not 80 yet. This, everyone's sitting too much, everyone has back problems, everyone has like eye problems, they go blind from sitting too much behind a computer. It's just the way it is. Of course, not to idealize the life on the earth. Advocates of the modern lifestyle will say, Prabhupada made the statement that there is no overpopulation. So that's a big statement to make, you know, especially now that we have 7 billion on the planet. And it's like people say, it's like, you're wacko, you're out there, you're just on cloud nine, you know. Look at the facts, the scientific facts. They show there's overpopulation. I saw some statistics. It was like a BBC thing on overpopulation. I had a look at it just for the sake of being able to speak about it, right, with some, in a way that it makes sense. And he was explaining that you don't just look at the numbers like 7 billions, but you have to look what age groups they're in, and then you can sort of calculate, you know. Then you have to look what the average number of children are that people are having. And it's like, you know, there's a lot of propaganda now in the world to diminish the number of children. And this is happening. It's like even... So in Asia, they're also having less children in Asia than before. And even in the Muslim countries, we always say the Muslims, you know, they have so many children. But it's not... not so much the case anymore. There's also amongst Muslims, it's going down to 2 or 3 now, instead of 12 as an average. Like a country like Bangladesh, most populated and so on. 3 kids is now the average So calculating on all these things, it's gradually coming down, and people will, and by having less children, the average age of the world population goes off, and lots of people die off, and so on like that. And then, so let's say, it comes to a saturation point. Yeah, it's not all like just going to explode. The exponential curve, you know, it showed how it went into an exponential curve, is it? But then that curve will, again, slow down. So it's not just, you know. That's one thing. And many other things, of course, are to be considered. It showed people in Africa living in the village. And it just it showed how people are trying to get out of poverty, right? So there's the people in the village who are just basically living from the field and who eat what they grow, and they're very poor, right? It's like this is the ultimate of poverty. So then it shows how these people, they want a bicycle. You know, a bicycle. They live for a bicycle. Somehow or other, they, for years and years and years, somehow or other, they're saving. And then finally, you know, so it shows in the movie, a man who has, like, finally got the savings. And he's getting the bicycle. And now life has changed. You know, now he can go further away. Now he can go on the market and go load up his bicycle, you know, with lots of stuff. Drive it all to the market, sell stuff in the market, and gradually he can make some money now. And he can start saving more money. And, you know, and what he wanted next is a motorbike. And now he's saving for a motorbike. And it's like you can understand what's coming next, and next, and next, and see it happen in China, now in India, and see how gradually we're going away from what we should be doing, living from the land and chanting Hare Krishna and worshipping Krishna. And instead of making all these little adjustments materially to spiritually to just spiritually develop our life. And with it, the demigods will bless, the Supreme Lord will bless, the circumstances will improve. And with it, everything is based on knowledge. And the basic staple food will be rice, dal, sabji, chapati. And sometimes some chutney and a few pakoras as well. And so on. And everything will be there. The basic food package will be complete. Milk will be there. And cows and bulls will be used for tilling the fields and for transport. And people will eat what they grow in their area, instead of like by planes and ships, banana boats coming in. But then you get the tarantulas also. We've had tarantulas in the Netherlands because somehow or other I learned in Brazil we have a farm. ISKCON has a farm called Gora Vrindavan, and it's a banana farm. It's like kind of in the Atlantic rainforest, and you go in there, and there's mountain slopes, and there's all endless banana trees on the mountains. And they do it with workers. And but that's where the tarantulas live. So the farm is full of tarantulas. I was a little careful in the dark for reaching for the light switch or things, because I know from India that scorpions and spiders often sit on walls. So first shine my torch. But what to do? One has to just trust Krishna. guess. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. If tarantula bites, it bites. But it's an impious place where there are tarantulas. Why live there? Why live in Brazil where there are fish that can swim through people, eating their way through a person? They don't have to slow down. They can eat your flesh so fast that they can swim right through you, so they say. Not piranhas. There are others that can even eat the flesh quicker than the piranhas. Piranhas need a little time, about 15 seconds or a minute or so. Impious river, the Amazon, better the Ganga. It's a pious river. So, but where there is no piety, we can create it. And the demigods will bless these places. Even in Japan, in Hiroshima, Nagasaki, there were survivors, right? People that they show now speaking about that experience, how they saw the plane, and it was just amazing. People came out of their houses to watch the plane because they had never seen a plane, and they were waving at it. Right? Then they threw the bomb. So much heat was generated. It blasted. The survivors burned their faces, all blistered. But they survived somehow or other. Each bomb could kill about 700,000 people. So, like that, we can. But some people survived. So this whole endless material arrangements—that's what we're doing. Holland used to be very different, obviously. And if you want to see Holland, you can only see it on the water. Actually. If you go by boat, right, along the canals and the lakes, you'll see Holland. You see the old Holland. Then you can start seeing a bit of the old Holland. You go a bit away. I used to. You go a bit away from the main drag into areas, and then you see like maybe a simple farm. And this was the land of farms and cows. Yeah. Unfortunately, the Dutch proverbs show that the culture wasn't right. For example, they say, don't bother taking old cows out of the canal, right? Which is like, which basically means don't bring up the same old things again. We've discussed it already. Don't bring it up again. Don't bring these old cows out of the canal, right? Yeah, an old cow that went into the canal, too much trouble to try and take it out, it's going to die anyway, so let it go. So this kind of impiety was there. But otherwise, this country potentially is a blessed place, because potentially it's a country for cows. And Prabhupada saw that. And when Prabhupada came to the Netherlands, he said, we should have a farm and we should have cows. Of course, we don't have, because we don't have money. But that's what it is. And then the Dutch ladies, Vishaka, they were the milkmaids. Right? You look at the old paintings, they had to milk the cows. And then they found out that, that these milkmaids, right, they stayed very healthy. They were protected from certain diseases like tuberculosis they didn't get. Well, other people died off of tuberculosis. That was killer number one. But the milkmaids wouldn't get, because they would get some antibodies in the course of milking. So just see. Yeah. It's good to be a milkmaid. So this is our plan. All the women back to being milkmaids. All the men plowing the fields. Kick down the computers, smash them, break them, destroy them, and just behind a bullock. That's actually the plan. When, oh when, that day will come, I don't know. But it's heading that way. That's the goal. And we use computers to get rid of computers, and phones to get rid of phones, and cars to get rid of cars, as one fights fire with fire. That's the program. So while we use these things, you shouldn't get attached to them, because it's rubbish. Because a computer is the worst for japa. A computer is a japa killer, right? So that proves that it's demoniac. You can purify it, right, by not turning it on at certain times of the day, and only reading Krishna conscious things on it. But even then, it still is ugra, because it still drains. It still sucks the energy. You can use it in Krishna's service, fine. But it is a killer, actually, for the back, the neck, the eyes, the head, and everything, the digestion. And then you need special chairs. You get the most ridiculous computer chairs these days. Absolutely bizarre things, you know. Trying to get the body in different poses so that somehow or other the vertebrae are stretched a little bit and not compressed too much. So, all this artificial stuff. When, oh when? The day that we'll go back to that original way of life, I think we'll be surprised that we like it. We're actually going to like it. And we might just like it. Anyway, questions, comments, challenges. I'll get into the vegans in the next few days.
In the devotional community, we hear different arguments for veganism. So some devotees some people argue along the lines that milk is not healthy or whatever. So they're sort of contaminated by modern propaganda.
Yeah, what's healthy?
Yeah, then other devotees, the devotees I know are vegan. They are also for the idea of really serious about protecting cows and getting farms or whatever, but they say that it's hypocritical to take milk. So they say the first step towards, if you want to preach cow protection, you cannot
mundane morality. Yeah, it's mundane morality. Not understanding the transcendental nature of the Sankirtan movement. And that our business is not to try and make a good impression upon people. Our business is to engage. You see, they think that this movement will spread by making a good impression on people. You know, that's not our business. Our business is to engage people people and animals, all living beings, in as much devotional service as possible. So if we take the milk of the cow is engaged in devotional service. Okay, the cow lives in hell due to some previous karma. The cow is going through some severe suffering, whatever it may be, abused. We agree, it's terrible. We are not taking it lightly. We're feeling sad about it. But meanwhile, let's offer as much milk as we get. You know, offer trucks of milk. But then, you can't throw the prasadam away, you have to honor it. Then we have to take all that milk. So we got to preach to people to take all that prasadam milk. Yeah. In this way, the cows get delivered, and those who take the milk as well, and that finer brain tissue, which you seem to like a lot, is also there. Is also you get finer brain tissue. So some may say yes, but this is no longer milk. It's homogenized, and it is like, you know, it's like it's just full of chemicals. It's like it's anything but milk. So even if there's a little bit of milk left, we still take it. And Prabhupada had that spirit when they said in America there's vitamin D in the milk. Prabhupada said, don't worry, just take it. But it may not be vegetarian, Prabhupada said. Anyway, if this is all we can get, then we'll offer it and we'll take it.
And we also see that there's more movement.
There's more?
There's a movement starting where people do organic milk, organic farms, where they protect the cows to a certain extent, but it's often very expensive. Should the owners rather go for like, should they rather like spend more money to buy like one?
If we have, it's nice. If we have, it's nice. If we can, but you know, how much money do we have? It's like, you know, if you try to live like that, you got to be rich, you know. You got to either be rich or be a sannyasi to live like that. Ordinary devotees can't afford it. You know what I mean? I mean, I can, of course, say, you know, it's like I eat only. I drink only milk, you know, that comes from cows that are protected and die a natural death. Okay, the devotees have to drive, you know, to some special farm, bring that milk. I mean, we know that for some guru's toothbrush, it's like 40 liters of petrol was spent to go and buy it in a special shop. So, okay, you know, fine, you know, that's in the Sonacharya days. It's got to be real. It's got to be a way of life. So I don't know if that's realistic, but yeah, the more we can ourselves protect cows or find people who are willing to protect cows, and buy that milk, good. And then some people are, you know, buying milk from the farmer, and then to boycott a lot of the factory processing. Of course, you don't know what processing is going on in the farm itself, right? In the food and in the and you know, it's like hormones that are added and this and that, so many things. What can you do? And yesterday we were saying the vegans, right, their alternative to milk is basically tofu, isn't it? Correct?
Soya.
Isn't it?
Cocoa,
and soya. Well, soya is one of the highest genetically engineered types of food in the world, right? You practically cannot get pure soya. It's always manipulated with animal genes. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, anything genetically engineered is not recommended because it's, you know, it's not even vegan. So, soya, I'm sorry to say, there's a problem with soya. Yes. You did what? What did you do?
I replaced milk with soy milk.
Yeah, demoniac stuff.
Some time in the restaurant, like experiments, and then I got such a, especially my thigh, and the smaller body, and this thigh got so
big.
Thick, yeah, like strange acids.
Yeah. This soy milk is. Well, it is said that the protein is too high, right? It's not recommended in scripture to actually take it. Yeah, too high proteins rejected. Therefore, sometimes not considered vegetarian in some Vedic scriptures. well, of course, not not an animal product, but not suitable for actually a balanced diet. Yeah. Yeah, I used to eat macrobiotic, but then, you know, and we'd eat a lot of chickpeas and seaweed, tzatziki and kombu and all these things, right? And then, but the amount of air that people passed in that, was more than average, I must say, eating brown rice with tamari, gomasio, and chopsticks. I mean, it's kind of a heavy diet, you know. Better white basmati. It's lighter for digestion. So, yeah. We can argue about it for a long time. The vegans. And some of my friends are vegans. I'll argue with them.
One question about shloka.
What do you want to do?
The knot. Oh,
the knot. You want to cut the knot.
The sword of knowledge. And it's so painful.
Yes, it's a little painful. Yeah, it's therefore you need knowledge. You know, you need knowledge. It's just like I just went to the dentist, right? It's painful. Painful. And I voluntarily went. I just walked in and I voluntarily sat down in the chair. You start drilling. When I was a kid, I didn't do that. I would scream and my mother would have to catch me, you know, like, I mean, I wouldn't go, forget it, you know. But now I voluntarily walk in. Eh? I would run away in school when they take all the kids to get a tetanus shot. We'd have to walk to some health house, 1 kilometer, that all the kids, a few hundred kids from the whole school in a cologne were going towards this, and then everyone goes in and like, I would run away, forget it. You know, too painful. I'm not doing it. But then when you know, when you have knowledge, when you know that the alternative is more painful, then you can do. So that's the only way we can do it, by knowledge. It's the sword of knowledge. So we need a lot of knowledge. We need to see how material life is actually painful.
It's like devil.
Yeah, devil is also there. Yeah, but before the cutting, you have to hear. You have to hear.
But it's already, mind is made up. That stage I cleared. But then, now in the moment, with X or sword, whatever, it's so pain. Now I'm the moment that I'm feeling this pain.
Yeah.
Because pain is the real thing.
Yes. That is, it is. But there's more pain also in material life. Yeah, it's just slow pain sometimes. Sometimes the medical action is a quick one, right? You know, you have to cut it out now, because later on you'll die of cancer.
Again, this is knowledge.
What?
Again, the knowledge.
Yeah. But therefore knowledge is, therefore it is said, no, okay, I don't leave you with knowledge, don't worry. I won't leave you with this. It is said, balavan indriyan gramo vidvamsam apikarsati. The senses are so strong that even a man of learning is struggling for the arguments, for the reasons you say, and other reasons. So it's very hard. It's painful, or the enjoyment looks so good. And you know, it's not ultimately going to satisfy the soul, but it's going to give you some taste in the here and now. And we need something now also. We need to live now. Right? You can't just live on a promise for later. Little, some happiness sometimes. So, what to do? Therefore, Krishna consciousness, knowledge is only a support, it only helps us. It's love that we need. We need higher taste. We need to love it. See, if we do things in Krishna consciousness that we love, then we are strong. Then we can do so many things. So it's this love that is the real thing. The love to serve Krishna is the thing that can really lift us above. But in the beginning, it's a bit of both. Sometimes the little love for Krishna, where the love falls short, bring your sword. Oh, I can't cut, it's too painful. Okay, need a little more. Here, some more gulab jamuns, some more ratiyatras, some more ecstasy. Okay, then, now the combination. Okay, now I can overcome this weakness. Now I can cut. So it's a combination. So you don't, it's not all just the sort of knowledge. There's also the love for bhakti, for Krishna. And when that is stronger, you can do anything. When you love Krishna, who cares about the material world? Let it go. Little pain, meaningless. Prabhupada didn't care. It's insignificant. Krishna is so wonderful. He stepped in a pin. You know, one of these wall pins for hanging pictures. He stepped in it, in the foot. Very peacefully lifted his foot, took it out, never even screamed. Are you sorry? Said, Prabhupada, Prabhupada, your cheek, it's swollen. You have a toothache. But it was some discomfort. That was it. Did not go into it. Pain, the mind goes into the pain. You know, pain, 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 that's all I am. It's my finger, you know, my finger, it hurts. I am my finger. Pain, pain, pain. Go into the pain. What's wrong with you? You have a toothache. It's a bit, yeah. Oh. And we have a pact. We give sympathy to each other. When you have pain, I go, oh, you have pain. Oh, poor you. And the next time I have pain, and then you have to go, oh, poor you. And this way we have a pact. We support each other's pain. You see. Our consciousness goes so much in the pain. And when you're full of love for Krishna, oh, pain, yes. Krishna, 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 Krishna. It's in the background. Finished? Finished.